The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, last show of the week, and a lot to get to on today's program, just listening to the news there at the top of the hour about the World Cup. You talk about Russian collusion. Somehow Russia landed in the easiest grouping. Some say the easiest group in a World Cup in history. They kick off the event. Of course, it's being staged in Russia. They kick off the event against possibly the easiest team to play, like a tune-up. They're playing Saudi Arabia. I think they won 5-0. And none of this is in my notes, but I thought I'd just throw that out there since Russia is featured prominently in news coverage today. Wouldn't it be something if Russia makes a run? I don't even think Russia is supposed to be that good, but they have a good chance of getting out of their group and onto the, what is it, the final 16, do you know? Is that how it works? Something like that. Well, the World Cup's coming to the United States as well, and President Trump was bragging about that this morning on Twitter. This was something that the Obama people were trying to do. They came out with special videos, this and that, and it never did work for them. And President Trump's in there for a year and a half, and lo and behold, here comes the World Cup. I think it's 2026. So another feather in his cap. And speaking of the Obama administration, we'll be getting to the Inspector General's report here in just a little bit. The much-anticipated report, what, 568 pages? I think I got through two or three of the pages this morning and read quite a few articles about the report. But I'll be directing your attention to the two pages, two or three pages that I went through in particular, because I think they are quite revealing. We'll come to that here in just a second. First, a little bit more, though, on the exhibit, the world premiere of these precious artifacts. We had some pretty good coverage on this story, and also the grand opening ceremony from Sunday night continues to appear in the Israeli papers. One in particular, we tweeted about this morning, the Times of Israel had a piece, Why the World Premiere of Precious Biblical Artifacts is in Quiet Oklahoma. So that's how Oklahoma is portrayed in the Israeli press. Well, actually, this article was written by a female reporter. I went into her offices on Monday before we flew home that evening for an interview, and she also sat down with Brent Nachtigall and Brad McDonald, and she wasn't there for the premiere event Sunday night, but she obviously watched the videos that we produced from that event, and you can see a lot of the detail brought out in her article, and also just quite a bit of history that she covers, and I think quite fairly overall. There were a few little tidbits that she got wrong, and a few of those we were able to talk to her this morning, and she corrected them. So she's doing her best to try to get the truth out there, which is unusual in the media today. We'll talk more on that a little bit later as well. But she says here in her piece, a rare world premiere exhibit of ancient biblical era artifacts was launched this week at Armstrong Auditorium in Edmond, Oklahoma, located in the middle of lush green fields, the massive pillared auditorium, complete with a water sculpture at its entrance, is an unlikely forum for the first ever display of tangible proof of the biblical King Hezekiah and Prophet Isaiah. It says the exhibit, this is further on, the exhibit is the fruit of the 50-year partnership between a group of steadfast Christians, that's you, Sam, steadfast Christians and generations of the archaeological Mazar family, and it is impressive, she says. But who will see it? Who's going to see it? And she points out how that we don't just have this huge stream of people that come through the exhibit, but that there is a pretty impressive online presence. And then she talks about their relationship. At some point, she calls Mr. Armstrong a media genius, which I thought was pretty cool. And then, as I say, she does talk about the history between the Armstrongs, or Mr. Armstrong, and the Mazars. It says here, after Mr. Armstrong's death in 1986, his ministry fell into disarray with infighting and scandal after several disciples repudiated their former leader's teachings and fought to gain control of the worldwide Church of God empire. In 1989, an excommunicated Gerald Flurry decided to start from scratch. That's pretty good history. That's what happened. I mean, it certainly started from scratch. It says, Mr. Flurry took up Armstrong's mantle, founded the Philadelphia Church of God, and attempted to restart Mr. Armstrong's mission. It says in 1997, after a drawn-out battle, Mr. Flurry began to republish Mr. Armstrong's writings. Well, the drawn-out battle actually concluded in 2003, so a little bit off on that detail there. But as I say, a sweeping review of some of that history, and later on when she talks about the exhibit and, you know, why we're so interested in archaeology, she quotes Mr. McDonald, Brad McDonald, saying that we want to make archaeology great again. we're not going to be able to use the MAGA reference, MAGA, but a little bit of a play on President Trump's mantra, make archaeology great again. That made it into the piece. Another article on Breaking Israel News. This is a smaller website in Israel. I think that's read mostly by religious people. But just one little tidbit from this article. It says, when Mr. Armstrong died in 1986, his successors abandoned his legacy until in 1989, Gerald Flurry, an ambassador graduate and Worldwide Church of God minister, opened the Philadelphia Church of God to continue Armstrong's legacy. It says in 1996, he established Armstrong's Ambassador International Cultural Foundation, and then later Herbert W. Armstrong College. So this is our story, basically, that's appearing in some of these Israeli sources. It's great to see that history resurrected. As I was saying earlier this week, I can't remember if it was on this program. Well, I think it was over the weekend with the group that was down in Jerusalem. But when we went to Israel back in the mid to late 90s, we were Andrew Locher and I, and sometimes we had another person or two that would help with some of the filming. But we traveled to the Middle East often there in the mid-1990s during the summer for 2-3 weeks at a time with my father, and we'd bounce around to these various locations where he would record a television program for the Key of David. And it was on one of our trips to Jerusalem that we viewed that courtyard. I forget the name of the organization, but it's in the German colony there in Jerusalem, where there's this courtyard and then this stone marker on one of the walls where it says Herbert W. Armstrong Square. And the first time that we saw it, we had to, kind of cut back the shrubbery and the all the overgrowth, basically, that had covered up this marker. And so we just kind of broke some of the stems and such and moved it back so that you could see it. And I just remember when I saw that the first time, after years, I mean, this is years after Mr. Armstrong's death, and the work, I mean, at that time, we were very small still, just a few years into the Philadelphia Church of God history. And I just remember being sad when I saw that, thinking that, wow, Herbert Armstrong had this great work in Jerusalem and in Israel. And now, I mean, a lot of it's just kind of been covered up, just like that stone marker. And that work, I mean, it seems like it practically stopped. Well, this work, the work of the Philadelphia Church of God, the work of the Trumpet, the Trumpet magazine, the Trumpet.com, the Key of David program, I mean, these radio programs, all of the Armstrong Auditorium, the exhibits, the college, the foundation, That's the work of raising the ruins, and we've seen those ruins raised. We've seen them raised. And so now, I mean, so many years on from Mr. Armstrong's death, more than 30 years, and look at what you see now in the papers of Israel, the Times of Israel. And, of course, there was a lot of publicity in the lead up to our ceremony last week. I mean, that story, that history is being retold. And it's being written together with the Philadelphia Church of God and Armstrong College today. All of these connections. It's pretty inspiring to see. I mean, this is God's doing, of course. But God's raised the ruins. He's resurrected that history. And here people in Israel are reading these sources. And they're being reminded of this great man of God who knew all of the Israeli prime ministers and presidents and the mayor of Jerusalem and the Mazar family. He truly did reach the cities of Judah in his own way. And that work is being done again, as it says over in Isaiah 40 and verse 9. It's inspiring to see it. It's a wonderful privilege and honor to be a part of it. Well, as far as a few other headlines here, just to transition over to something that Richard Palmer will be talking about later on today at the Trumpet Hour, the weekly digest of all of the most significant events of the week, hosted by Joel Hilliker. But as we were discussing in our editorial meeting this morning, we want to really keep our eye on Germany. Miss Merkel's facing quite a crisis right now, the greatest crisis of her tenure. It's threatening to split up her coalition. This sharp division between her party and the Christian Social Union, the more conservative party in Bavaria that wants to clamp down on the illegal immigration, or at least to have greater border security. And it goes right against what has been Miss Merkel's refugee policy. So it's coming to a head, this sharp division, it says at Deutsche Welle today. And even if Merkel comes out of this crisis intact, she knows that her position within her own party is now too weak to take any more major political risks. According to Geyer, it says, from this day forward, Merkel will be an altogether different kind of chancellor. I mean, her position is really weakening. And it comes at a time when, as I've been covering on this program over the last couple of weeks, I mean, she knows. She knows that Germany and all of Europe needs a strong man. She knows that Germany needs someone who can stand up to the strong men of this world. It's pretty amazing to see just how fast these events are happening. Over at Berlin Policy Journal, it says the rift among Merkel's conservative bloc escalated so dramatically on Thursday that many in government circles were discussing the possibility of a vote of no confidence that could oust Merkel. It says further on, a high-ranking leader of the CSU described the conflict with the CDU as very serious. There were rumors of the two breaking their union, an alliance that has stood for decades. That would lead to an historic shift in German politics. So as I say, you'll want to tune in later today to the Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker and listen to what he discusses, most likely with Richard Palmer, regarding the news coming from this part of the world. When we come back, we'll delve into the latest on the Antiochus administration that preceded the Trump administration, this Inspector General's report that was released just yesterday, having to do with the investigation into Hillary Clinton and the email server and so on. We'll delve into that a bit more when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
Oh, my God.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and persons that at one time were known to us only from Scripture. The Bible is real, and you need to pay attention to it. Call now and request your free copy of The Authority of the Bible. This lesson, which comes from the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, blows the dust off your Bible. You will learn how to mine the treasures buried in the greatest book on earth. You can discover its secrets and enrich your life today. For more information, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
So if you're looking for some weekend reading, you might want to sift through the 568-page Inspector General's report on the investigation into the Hillary Clinton campaign. Well, even before that, really, the investigation while she was campaigning was into her behavior when she was Secretary of State back between 2009 and 2013, and the personal private server that she set up straight away when coming into that office. I'm just going to go through several points, as much as we have time for on today's program. Several points coming out from this damning report. As I say, it's a huge document, and I haven't gone through it myself. Just a few pages, but one that I read about this morning. This is page 12 of the executive summary. If you want to read one page, one explosive page, it's early on in the document, Roman numeral 12 from the executive summary, and it says this: the media, of course, they're reporting this. Or on this, saying that, well, there's nothing really new to report here. There's no new evidence. There's nothing explosive. We've heard it all before. Never mind. And notice what it says, 12 pages in. This is from the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, I think is his name. We identified numerous FBI employees at all levels of the organization and with no official reason to be in contact with the media, who were nevertheless in frequent contact with reporters. See, the media is part of this story. Listen to this. Attached to this report as attachments E and F, so they had to have two special attachments connected to this report to show the link between the radical left, the link between the deep state, and the mainstream media. There's two link charts that reflect the volume of communications that we identified between FBI employees and media representatives in this time period. This is 2016 when the investigation was going on. The Inspector General says, we have profound concerns about the volume and extent of unauthorized media contacts by FBI personnel that we have uncovered during our review. In other words, there was just widespread and rampant leaking. It was going on from top to bottom. Dozens and dozens of officials, not just James Comey. And listen to this. The IG says, in addition, we identified instances where FBI employees improperly receive benefits. That's the word that he uses here. Sugarcoating it. Received benefits from reporters, including tickets to sporting events, golfing outings, drinks and meals, and admittance to non-public social events. So this is the major media, the mainstream media, bribing the FBI officials for leaks. Now, in some ways, this is not a new story. You've been hearing about leaks right and left with respect to the investigation into the so-called Trump-Russia collusion And keep in mind that this investigation, this report, it only pertains to Hillary Clinton and her email servers. And there were all kinds of leaks during 2016. Of course, those leaks were carefully orchestrated to help to support Hillary Clinton. Now, of course, it's working in the opposite direction. The leaks that are coming out from the FBI, they're intended to hurt Donald Trump. And that brings up another subject of this investigative report, the political bias that's there. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But again, here is the media, and they don't list names. They should, though. They should. Who are the names? Who are the organizations that are bribing FBI officials to get this insider information, to get this classified information in some cases? Who are the media types who are bribing FBI officials to commit felonies? Well, you remember James Clapper as far as some of the higher profile leaks over the last year and a half. I mean, he leaked to CNN last January about the Comey-Trump meeting in January 5th. He leaked it to CNN, and then, 8 or 9 months later, he gets a job at CNN. The point being, they're all in bed with each other. You see, the radical leftist deep state and the mainstream media benefits. That's how it's put. Tickets, sporting events, golfing outings, meals, drinks, social events. The Federalist had a piece today. It says the Department of Justice Inspector General released today includes, or the report released today includes, two elaborate charts mapping the volume of communications identified between FBI employees and members of the media. And then it quotes the report, saying that we have profound concerns about the volume and the extent of unauthorized media contacts by FBI personnel. Further on, it says, this is in the Federalist, I think it's quoting the report here, the issue of FBI employees improperly disclosing non-public information, aka leaking tips to reporters, raised considerable concerns. And as I say, they have to include these attachments with these charts that are connecting the dots between FBI officials and media types. And it says here in the Inspector General's report, although FBI policy strictly limits the employees who are authorized to speak to the media, we found that this policy appeared to be widely ignored during the period we reviewed. See, they don't obey their own rules. They're breaking their own rules right and left. And then they're conducting all of these investigations where if it's a political opponent, you better be sure they better be keeping and obeying all the rules. It's a double standard here. It says, we identified numerous FBI employees at all levels of the organization and with no official reason to be in contact with the media, who were nevertheless in frequent contact with reporters. It says the large number of FBI employees who were in contact with journalists during this time period impacted our ability to identify the source of leaks. There were just so many. I mean, we don't even know the specific sources here. Everyone was doing it. They all disregarded the rules. Now, just the other day, and here again, you know how the media reacted. When the president tweeted out, that was Wednesday, he said, our country's biggest enemy is the fake news so easily promulgated by fools. And all the reaction, the outrage. I think it was Wolf Blitzer who came out and said, look, we're not an enemy. We love America. We love the people of America. They're pretty sensitive. When you start talking about them being an enemy, you can go back. This is a powerful article, by the way, May of 2002, my father writing, where the media bias is leading us. Where is this leading? I mean, this article takes us back 16 years. And you look at some of the controversies back then, or the years before that. the impeachment proceedings back in 1999, and then, of course, the controversy over the election in the year 2000, Al Gore and George Bush. I mean, all of that seems like child's play compared to what we've seen in the last few years. And here, though, is my father in 2002. And he asks, are journalists who so often preach responsibility to others going to exude irresponsibility? Can they who hold so many accountable be so arrogantly unaccountable? Will they who expose so much scandal be so scandalous? That's what we're seeing. Here they would say about themselves, well, we're just here to report the truth. We're just here to get the facts. And it's astounding to me, like in the case with James Clapper, leaking out that information so that CNN would have the hook, remember? And Jake Tapper, who goes on and on about the so-called serial lying of President Trump, would never once talk about the Obama administration or anyone associated with it as being a liar or lying. They know what goes on behind the scenes. They're part of it. They're issuing bribes right and left. You think they're going to read this IG report? You think they're going to read page 12? And say, well, you know what? We've got some soul searching to do here. We're part of this mess. We're involved in this cloak of deceit. My father's article, I mean, it was spot on. And this is a 16-year-old piece. He said, they cease being reporters and they become media dictators. Well, that aligns pretty closely with what President Trump tweeted on Wednesday. It's America's biggest enemy, this fake news. Right in step with the radical left, right in step with the deep state. My father said in 2002, a wrong spirit has entered the newsroom. This is a danger to any free society. The more power they get, the more dangerous they become. Such a spirit deeply divides our people. I mean, they're in powerful positions. They can choose one word. They can describe the individual or the exchange. Now, we had a fairly good experience, as I say, with the reporting on the exhibit, but as we were discussing even this morning, it's amazing how even just the way they choose to describe this or that, it can sort of shade it in one direction or the other. Now, the one we worked with, at least at the Times of Israel, seemed like she wanted to get out a, you know, an accurate account. The same cannot be said for a lot of journalists in the mainstream, particularly those reporting on politics, particularly those covering their political opponents. There's a wrong spirit in the newsroom, as my father said, and that's dangerous because they're in powerful positions. These journalists, my father wrote, they act like they know better than God or anyone else who disagrees with them. This attitude goes beyond being just arrogant, and it brings God's wrath upon our people. He goes on to say, that's why we should be concerned. Further on, it says, like a political dictator, the press blots out good, objective views as if they didn't even exist. And they include an abundance of views that reinforce their biases. In their holier-than-thou attitude, they act like God has given them the right to teach us all how to think. They know, you see. They know how we're supposed to think. They know how we're supposed to react. Well, and they trust in themselves. God's not even part of the picture. It's every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. It's a dangerous time. An institution with this kind of power that feels like they know more than God. Notice this quote from my father's article. 2002. What happens when the press is corrected? Is there an inquiry to see if something is wrong? And do they then change if they are in error? I see no such attitude. They lack the humility to turn from a dangerous course, and they lack the vision to make our republic great. On the contrary, they are damaging it beyond repair. That's a Trumpet article from 2002. They have no such attitude, an attitude of repentance. They're not going to read this IG report and come to page 12 and say, you know what, we need to change this. This is not right. This is not legal. This is not ethical. You see no such spirit like that in the press rooms today. And yet they go on and on talking about their passion for the truth. And yet, like my father describes there, look at what they leave out. Look at what they avoid covering. Look at what they especially emphasize. Last night in our book club, we were in the middle section of Manchester's second volume on Winston Churchill. And I mean, it was painful to read. The Munich surrender, all that was happening in 1938, and poor Neville Chamberlain, who looked upon, you know, that piece of paper that he got in Munich as the great accomplishment of his career. That's the way he viewed it. And he waved it in front of those people out in front of 10 Downing. And his wife said, go ahead, say peace in our time. Well, I don't know, should I say that? And then he went and said it. And then he added that he had obtained peace with honor, which is exactly the opposite of what happened. He sold out. He sold honor to obtain a temporary peace. And oh, was it temporary. But the thing about that sellout is that he was right in step with a man named Geoffrey Dawson, who happened to be the editor of the Times of London. These two were best buddies. These two were friends. These two were committed to appeasing Hitler. They were committed to sacrificing Czechoslovakia, carving up a nation state to satisfy this dictator, this tyrant. That's right. Dawson came out with an editorial on September 7th, 1938, saying that, look, you know, Czechoslovakia, you should consider a more homogeneous state. And go ahead and let Germany annex that Sudetenland region. I mean, most of the people there are German anyway. So Hitler helped himself, thanks to Dawson and the Times, and to Neville Chamberlain. I mean, Churchill was outraged after he saw that editorial. He wrote a letter of response to Dawson the next day. Of course, Dawson refused to publish that, because it's angry. It's not the truth. It might make Hitler upset. So we just won't publish it. And then sure enough, after Hitler takes the Sudetenland, a few months later, he takes all of Czechoslovakia. He marches on Prague. And Chamberlain and Dawson are made to look like fools. But even then, the Times refused to publish the grotesque pictures coming out of Czechoslovakia in the months that followed, as tens of thousands of people were being murdered. They just chose not to cover it, just blot it out. That's not part of the narrative that we're trying to show here. What we're trying to show is that appeasement works. If you just give them what they want, the tyrants, everyone will be happy and we'll have peace in Europe. I mean, that was the major media in 1938. Manchester says the confidence of the Times' editor in assuming that he always spoke for Britain is a source of endless amazement. In other words, I'm astounded by the arrogance of one newspaper man who thought he knew more than all of Britain. Well, in America Under Attack, my father, as you know, in chapters 2 and 3, he has a fair bit more to say about the media today. Make sure, though, you go back to 2002, where the media bias is leading us. I mean, that's as strong as he's gotten with respect to the media. But in America Under Attack, he said, it seems these supposed professionals have lost all consciousness of their responsibility as journalists. They've lost it. Without a free and truthful media, a republic cannot survive. It's got to be free and truthful. It says, what you see is a direct symptom of the spiritual reality I described in the first chapter. Well, he's talking about the book and the first chapter and the devil who comes as an angel of light, using all of his powers of deceit and intimidation, and he's getting a stranglehold on the nation. And he's using so many of these media members. It says in chapter 3 of the booklet, Satan is always working to cast the truth to the ground. He hates the truth. He hates God's law. So he's always working to try to bury it. We experienced this in the court case, fighting over Mr. Armstrong's literature. And now that story, some of it, a summary of it, it's being covered in the Israeli press. Good for them. To revisit this history. Satan is always working to bury the truth of God. To bury the truth, period. We talked about searching for truth yesterday on the program. The devil's hard at work, trying to bury that truth. Well, one takeaway from this Inspector General's report, released just yesterday, is that it's the media who are guilty, among others. But the media are guilty. They're guilty of collusion. They're guilty of deceit, lies. They're connected to all this corruption and evil in the deep state. Another thing that this report shows is that the investigation into the Hillary Clinton private email server, it was a sham from the very beginning. It was a fake investigation. It was all for show. There was never any intent whatsoever to actually recommend any kind of criminal charges or prosecution. It was just all going through the motions to make it seem like the FBI was being objective. Listen, this is another page from the report. I think it's page 1 actually of the introduction summary. The introduction, here, it does a great job here of just explaining the background leading up to the investigation, this IG report, talking about how that Secretary of Clinton, she served as the Secretary of State from January 2009 to February of 2013, and as this report brings out, she made arrangements to set up a private email server right at the time she came into office, January of 2009. I mean, this is at the same time she would have been briefed about how to deal with classified information, about how to be so careful with classified information, how to avoid gross negligence. So she comes into office, and right away, she has some people set up these private email servers hosting the @ClintonEmail.com domain. And this IG report says here, in 2014, in response to a request from the State Department to Clinton for copies of any federal records in her possession, such as emails sent or received on a personal email account, while serving as Secretary of State, Clinton produced to the State Department 30,000 emails from her private server that her attorneys determined were work-related. So she had her attorneys in there deciding, okay, we can turn this one over. No raids or anything like that. Oh, no. No FBI agents barging into her apartment or her house or her office in the middle of the night. Her own attorneys, were the ones who decided which emails we'll turn over and which ones we won't. So they turn over 30,000 emails. and they don't turn over about 32,000 emails because, well, these were just personal emails. And then, as the IG report brings out, those personal emails were subsequently deleted from the computers. It says further on, in 2015, at the State Department's request, the Office of the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community reviewed emails from Clinton's private email server that she had produced to the State Department and identified a potential compromise of classified information. That's what led up to then the investigation called the Mid-Year Exam. This was the investigation going on during the campaign for president in the middle of 2016. So it talks about some of the things that it went through there. And then it says further on June 27th, 2016, while the mid-year investigation was nearing completion, then Attorney General Loretta Lynch and former President Bill Clinton had an unscheduled meeting while their planes were parked on the tarmac at Phoenix's Sky Harbor Airport. So here comes the meeting. This is just days before James Comey would come out and say, you know, we're not going to recommend any charges be pressed here. Lynch meets together with Bill Clinton. And of course, that set off all kinds of controversy as people got wind of that and said, well, what's going on here? This is, I mean, she's under investigation. What's the Attorney General doing with her husband? It says on July 1st, 2016, Lynch publicly announced that she would accept the recommendation of the mid-year investigation, whatever Comey decided, in other words. And then it says the following day, July 2nd, 2016, the FBI and the department, the FBI and department prosecutors interviewed former Secretary Clinton at the FBI headquarters. And this was all for show as well, because it had already been determined that they weren't going to recommend that she be prosecuted. So Comey comes out on July 5th, 2016, and as the IG report brings out, this was not in his jurisdiction. He didn't have the authority to come out and say what he said on July 5th. But he went ahead and did it because he knew if he told the Justice Department or whoever that they would say, don't do it. You can't do that. You shouldn't do that. So he just comes out, he talks, the language, as you probably know, had been adjusted in the weeks leading up to this announcement. They had to take away grossly negligent, because if she's guilty of gross negligence, then she broke the law. So they adjusted the wording along the way to where finally, when he came out in front of cameras on July 5th, he said extremely careless. She was just careless. And this sort of squared with President Obama, with what he had said in April. About how that, well, you know, she made some mistakes. I think I have that clip here somewhere. Let's play, go ahead to clip two, Sam.
Hillary Clinton was an outstanding Secretary of State. She would never intentionally put America in any kind of jeopardy. And what I also know, because I handle a lot of classified information, is that there's classified and then there's classified. There's stuff that is really top secret, and there's stuff that is being presented to the president or the Secretary of State that you might not want on the transom or, you know, going out over the wire, but is basically stuff that you could get in open source.
So it wasn't serious, in other words. I mean, some of it might have been secret, but it wasn't that serious. And she was a great Secretary of State. That's what he's saying there. It did not take away from her service to the American people. And it might have been careless, but it certainly wasn't any kind of criminal activity. So this is while the investigation's going on. That interview was from April of 2016. And then he went on to say in the same interview that, well, we're not in any way interfering. I mean, what he just said there interfered with the investigation. He's the commander-in-chief. He's the president of the United States. He's over the FBI. He's over the DOJ. And he says she didn't do anything serious. There's classified information, and then there's classified information. And here's what he went on to say in that same interview, clip three.
Previous presidents.
Just to button this up.
I guarantee it.
You
I guarantee that there is no political influence in any investigation conducted by the Justice Department or the FBI, not just in this case, but in any case.
And she will be
full stop, period.
And she will be treated no differently?
Guaranteed, full stop. Nobody gets treated differently when it comes to the Justice Department because nobody is above the law.
Even if she ends up as the Democratic nominee?
How many times do I have to say it, Chris? Guaranteed.
Over and again. It's going to be fair. Nobody's above the law. You know, this report yesterday, I forget which page. This is also on page 12 of the summary, the executive summary. It says, we learned during the course of our review that Comey, Strzok, and Page, you remember those two, the ones that were texting each other, saying that in the case of Strzok, he came out and said, there's no way Trump's going to make it in as president. We're going to prevent it. That's in his text messages. But nothing political here. And in this IG report, it says, we learned during the course of our review that Comey, Strzok, and Page used their personal email accounts to conduct FBI business. I mean, these are the people that are charged with the task of investigating whether Clinton should be charged with a crime for conducting official government business on a private server. And they were doing the same thing. I mean, the fix was in from the beginning. They were all doing it. They were all using their personal private emails to conduct business. Government business at the FBI, at the Secretary of State, or the Department of State. CNBC, I mean, this was an astounding piece today as well that Richard gave me. It says the IG report noted that in October 2016, Comey spoke at the FBI's annual SAC conference in San Diego and noted that his investigators' view was there really isn't anything here that anybody would prosecute. Okay, so she didn't do anything wrong because, you know, there's classified and then there's classified. There's serious classified. But Comey added, I've gotten emails from some, this is quoting Comey, I've gotten emails from some employees about this who said, well, if I did what Hillary Clinton did, I'd be in huge trouble. And Comey went on to say, you know, you're right. If you were to use a private email account to conduct official FBI business, you would be in serious trouble. And now we get the IG report yesterday, which informs us that Comey himself was doing that. Well, I don't want to focus just strictly on him because I think another takeaway from this IG report is that you still, I mean, as damning as the evidence is, exposing all of this evil in the deep state, exposing just how much it had all been politicized, how that the FBI had been weaponized, as damaging as all of that is, there still is a concerted effort right across the board to erase Barack Obama's involvement. Everything on that front is covered up. It's all Comey, Comey, Comey. But who was Jim Comey's boss? Look at what's being exposed, though. And if you just connect the dots, I mean, and you're honest, you're going to see who's behind it all. A lot of that's already been exposed, but you do have to piece it together. You do have to piece it together. Comey's the fall guy, though. All right, he was corrupt. He was insubordinate. He presided over an institution that was clearly biased. Well, we don't see anything directly that says it was a politically motivated investigation, but I mean, there was bias through and through. I mean, you read through the report and it's just bias everywhere. You see the text messages, it's bias everywhere. And okay, they didn't see it in black and white like Kim Strassel brings out at the Wall Street Journal saying, let's start an investigation based upon politics. And yet that's what the major media, no doubt, will key on. Okay, it wasn't a politically motivated investigation. See, nothing new to report here. Let's move on. The cover-up will continue, no matter how much of this comes forward. But the other thing to point out here before we conclude is that a lot, though, is coming forward. And none of this evil, none of it, would have been exposed if Hillary Clinton would have won the presidency in November of 2016. We wouldn't be hearing about any of this. What's going on at the FBI or the DOJ? We wouldn't hear any of this. The text messages, the 568-page report. Victor Davis Hanson, well, he's talking about the scandals. I mean, all of this, remember, was taking place in the last year of Barack Obama. The last year of the presidency that we've been told was scandal-free. Remember that? We played the montage before. Here's a bit from it, clip one.
The president prides himself on the fact that his administration hasn't had a scandal and that he hasn't done anything to embarrass himself.
Look, I'm proud of the fact that with 2 weeks to go, we're probably the first administration in modern history that hasn't had a major scandal in the White House.
The president was 8 years scandal-free.
He and his entire family.
But this is a president who's gone out with no personal scandal.
And he's been scandal-free, frankly, in the White House. We haven't had that for a while.
Having saved us from a Great Depression and having had a scandal-free 8 years in office, handing off to somebody he never imagined he would be handing off to, but completing a term as president that will be viewed not just positively, but among the best in our history.
Just a sample in there from the media. The same people who, as a matter of routine, bribe officials in the deep state, deep in the deep state, for leaks, for insider information. That always seems to flow in the same direction. It's blatantly hostile to Donald Trump or the Trump administration. And it's just over the top supportive of Barack Obama, the radical left, Hillary Clinton. Victor Davis Hanson says those were puzzling assertions, the no scandals assertions. Given nearly nonstop scandals during Obama's 8 years in office involving the IRS, General Services Administration, the Peace Corps, Secret Service, Veterans Administration, and Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, not to mention the Clinton email server scandal, the Benghazi scandal, and the 2016 Democratic National Committee email scandal. For nearly 8 years, the Obama administration sought to cover up serial wrongdoing by waging a veritable war against the watchdog inspectors general of various federal agencies. All of these IGs, these inspector generals, and well, even the one that conducted this most recent one from yesterday, he was an Obama appointee. As condemning as all the evidence and the fact-gathering is, as I said, Barack Obama, I mean, he's pretty much erased from the picture. This article says in 2014, 47 of the nation's 73 inspectors general signed a letter alleging that Obama had stonewalled their ability to conduct our work thoroughly, independently, and in a timely manner. That's 47 of the nation's 73 IGs. The frustrated nonpartisan auditors cited systematic Obama administration refusals to turn over incriminating documents that were central to their investigations. They just stonewall, just like the FBI and the DOJ are doing right now. The text, one of the senators or congressmen pointed this out. The information that they wanted to get, a text message from Lisa Page, who asked, is he going to get in as president? And then they redacted the answer from Peter Strzok. Well, we now know the answer, thanks to the report from yesterday. The response from him was that, no, he's not going to get in. We're going to prevent it. Stonewalling, redactions. It says in 2012, Horowitz recommended that 14 Justice Department and ATF officials be disciplined for their conduct in the Fast and Furious gun walking scandal. A 2013 IG audit found that the IRS had targeted conservative groups for special scrutiny prior to the 2012 Obama reelection effort. Well, and then on and on it goes. John Brennan was exposed as lying. Further on, it says, still, Obama was right in a way. A scandal does not become a scandal if no one acts on findings of improper behavior. See, that's the thing. It's not that there aren't any scandals. It's that there's no prosecutions. They don't act on these IG reports. Nobody pays a price. Not if you're from the radical left. It says, under former Attorneys General Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch, the findings of dozens of IGs were snubbed. That raises the question, what good are inspectors general if a president ignores any illegality and impropriety that they have uncovered? Answer, not much good at all. What good is it if you get the report and then that's it? The media, they're in bed with them, and the media come out and say, hey, nothing new here. Don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. The big deal is what's happening with Donald Trump. Well, Victor Davis Hanson says right at the end, finding government abuse and doing nothing about it is worse than not finding any at all. It's good, as my father has said, at least this is being exposed. And it wouldn't have been exposed were it not for Donald Trump winning the presidency. But now that the abuse is there, I mean, what will the government do about it? Because if you do nothing about it, well, that's worse than not finding out anything at all. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next week.